This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life. Sandy Stream is an author and an activist who believes, as I do, that everyone can find courage and strength to live the life they were designed to live. Sandy taught law for 20 years and raised two children, facing adversities throughout her life. Her new book, The Courage Circle, is a compilation of the wisdom she gained from pain and trauma on her path to healing. She now encourages others to live in peace and power with themselves and in the world. When I held the book, I was reminded of a tip that my good friend and Reiki master, Shelley Kabelin, once gave me, a tip that I'd like to share with you. She said, to gain the essential message from any book, place it in the palm of your hand, draw a circle on the cover with your finger, tap the book within that circle, open it, and read the first thing your eyes see. That will be the message you need to hear. Sandy's book cover guides us to do just that, and the short passages within it are perfect bite-sized gems of wisdom. I read the book and found it to be a combination of advice from a best friend, along with universal wisdom and free therapy. So well worth the price of a paperback. Thanks for writing this book, Sandy, and welcome to Own the Gray.
Thank you so much for having me, Deborah. I'm really actually excited to be here talking to you.
Yeah, it's great topics. And I love all of the topics in your book. And there's so many directions we can go. But I know that, your stories are obviously based on your healing journey and your perspective, what I think is a healthy blend of empowerment, healed empowerment, optimism, and encouragement. And so I wanted to know, why did you focus on courage in your book?
Courage was not a word that I had heard a lot in my life, actually. It was like something that's just kind of out there. And if it was used, it was used for jumping in front of a train or doing something like that. Then I read this book called Power Versus Force, where they were talking about different energies of different states of being. And it struck me that when we're stuck in a state of, fear or shame or anger, not that there's anything wrong with any of these things, we're just talking about where we are. Sometimes courage is kind of that switch. It's like a flip switch in terms of getting out of certain places. And so the more I started feeling this, looking for that feeling of like, okay, courage, I'm going to have courage here and there, the more I realize it's actually a very powerful catalyst for moving us from one spot to another. And then I painted literally a circle on my living room. Like I was in such, bad state. It was the middle of COVID, millions of issues in my life, just so miserable. And I literally painted a circle and I'm like, this is going to be my personal courage circle. And I would like sit there and meditate and cry and take notes and do anything and everything in that spot. And then afterwards, I decided to write the book and call it that. But it was literally my current circle.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So that book, Power Versus Force, could you kind of just give a synopsis of what you mean by that? So what was that inspired the courage piece?
The author measures different vibrations, I guess, of different states that we might be in. So we might be in certain states and measure it. And then he spoke about courage being one that can get us to different higher states of being and other things that were very interesting. I only quoted two people in my book. One was from another author, and one quote from this book, Power Versus Force, that talked about the difference between the two and how, you know, power always wins over force, because force takes energy. It needs to like push something, whereas power, actually, it's like self-stand, you know, like the sun, like it just has. And so this is something also I began to truly understand in a deeper way for myself, how innately we have certain innate powers and feelings inside that we can access, and that we don't need to use force and control and other things, and that we can just live from that space. And I don't use that word empowerment as maybe other people use it very lightly, like, yeah, we're getting empowered. No, I mean it literally, like literally, that we actually have inner, you know, energy that we can access and feel when we need it for different purposes. So
yeah, I love that. And that really is how to be powerful, is not to have power over the situation or over someone else, but to have that power from within that, as you said, is intrinsic to who we are. And I love that idea of courage being like that switch, so that if you seek the courage within you, then you can access your power and make a change, do something differently that's going to give you a different result. So if you don't like where you are or how you're feeling, you need to change something, or you keep doing the same thing, you get the same result, right?
Yeah, and it takes actually a huge amount of courage. It's no small thing. And I mean, you know, I don't criticize anyone who hasn't moved or changed, because it's not easy. Like you know, in our world where people are constantly demeaning each other or not listening to each other properly, or, you know, telling each other what to do, or all kinds of things that are happening, to mm-hmm. actually have the courage to just be yourself, that's already huge. Like just to, you know, say what you feel or speak your mind or make your own choices, like that takes a huge amount of courage, given the current way that many people approach each other. And also it takes courage to make any change, right? Because we don't know the outcome. So in and of itself, it takes courage to, okay, I'm going to do something without knowing what's going to happen, but I'm going to do it anyways, because it feels right. And I'm going to trust that it feels right. So I'm doing it. I think once you're used to doing it, it takes actually a bit less courage, because you're like, no, I feel I'm going to do this and it'll work. You know, what happens, happens. It's fine. I'm good with that. But initially it takes huge leaps of courage. So it's not an easy thing to do, but
right.
I try to encourage others. That's why encourage has the word courage in it, as we know.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So your book has a lot of different topics in it, but they all are things that we feel, like they're universal emotions, for instance. And you talk about demonizing emotions. What did you mean by that when you wrote about that?
Yeah, that book, yeah, definitely has so many pieces, because for me, it's my basically presentation of the pieces of the puzzle that came for me to end up feeling well pretty much all the time and guiding myself well all the time, which wasn't something I felt before. So yes, it is many pieces. It's not one thing that leads to that. And hopefully some of my pieces are similar to other people's pieces, because we're all human, but they might not all be identical. But one very important piece for me was to realize that there is a generalized demonizing of our emotions, at least as I've experienced it in our society, where somehow our emotions are bad. So if I'm sad, I shouldn't feel sad. I shouldn't feel angry. Like something's wrong with me. And once I realized that, you know, in and of itself, that means that something is, if we demonize our own body, our own emotional states, that means we're kind of against ourselves. Like, why would our body be wrong? Right. So I, you know, learned to flip that idea of my own body and my own self and think, you know, if I'm having an emotion, it's for a reason. I'm actually going to listen to it instead of demonizing it. Maybe follow it, respect it, accept it, like do the opposite of demonizing an emotion. And for me, that was the beginning of understanding that my emotions were actually my guidance system. They were not my enemy. They were my friend and guiding me to what I need to do next. So if I was really sad or if someone's very lonely or something, if we don't demonize it and just say, oh my gosh, I'm so sad. What do I need? Maybe I need a new friend. Maybe I need to get out there. Maybe I need to talk to someone, right? So there's nothing bad about having the emotion if you actually listen to it and then see what you should do from it, right? Or if I get really angry, I'll respect that as well. Very much. I'll say, oh, I'm angry. And there must be a good reason for that. I'm not going to say, oh, Sandy, don't be angry. No, I'm going to say, why are you angry? You know, what's going on? Are you feeling disrespected? Is there a boundary being broken? Do I need to take some action somewhere? So anger also plays as my friend in that way. It's not the same as, you know, if you're angry to do something to someone. So it's not because I feel angry that I'm allowed to hit someone. That's different. Yeah. So feeling is allowed, but lashing out obviously is a behavior. That's something else. But to feel, that's completely, acceptable and healthy and necessary for you to know how to navigate your own life. And for me, it was the first step to learning, okay, to process my emotions, understand, maybe process some old ones, make new decisions. So it was a bit very messy ground to even enter that. But then eventually things are kind of cleaned out and there's not many happening. And if they do, and they do still happen, you know, and then I know, oh, okay, I better do this or I better do that. And it's all quicker and easier. So that's what I mean by knowing how to navigate myself now much easier. But again, that's just the first step. That's the first step, essential step for me of learning to feel, to feel again, you know. Yes, we're feeling our emotions, but then we can also feel, you know, our heart. We can feel another person. We can feel a tree. We can feel like, oh, I have a hunch I should learn about this person or talk to this one. Like you start to feel life because you're feeling. You're not anymore just thinking or, you know, you're not just in the head anymore. Basically, you're in your body. I'm sure that's very familiar to you, Deborah.
It is very familiar. Our society has really demonized anger, right? Because, you know, we were told you can't be angry. You know, it's not, you're not allowed to show that emotion. And I spend a lot of time sharing with my clients that anger is, yes, it's as valid as any other emotion. There's no bad emotions. There's just emotions. And it's this energy in motion that's flowing through you. And the trouble happens when you hold on to one of them, right? It's in motion for a reason. It's supposed to flow through because it's got a job to do. It's got to show you something or you need to learn something from it, right? But I often talk about how anger is fuel for change. Because if you don't have that anger behind you, you don't have enough fuel to take a giant leap if that's what you need to do or to make a change in your life. So anger is a really good catalyst for change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if it's there, it's there anyway. So we can't. but unfortunately, maybe many people, you know, try to avoid it or repress it or do other things for, you know, good reasons, especially when you're young, there's reasons to do that. You might get in all kinds of troubles that you don't want to be in. So we learn weird things if our parents didn't allow our emotions, obviously. If they allowed it, it's different. But if they didn't allow it, then it's easy to get stuck feeling like those are not allowed, and also feeling weird guilt about feeling angry. So people will feel, oh my God, I can't be angry at my teacher. She's just trying to help. I'm not allowed to be angry at this because they are, you know, so there's a lot of guilt associated with it instead of just allowing your feeling, understanding why you're not doing anything to anyone. You're just feeling it and understanding it, right? And then making choices for your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what did you learn about guilt and shame then? Because that's a big one too. What can you share with us about that?
What I would share is the second book that I quoted in my book. Actually, I think it was very crucial to that aspect. So that book is called It's Not Always Depression. I read it not because I had depression, and I don't myself think it is anything necessarily to do with depression. It's just the author was experiencing that. But From her and from others, I definitely understood that guilt and shame are not our primary emotions. She calls them inhibitory emotions. So they kind of stop you from feeling what she calls the core emotions. So they're just like in the way. So they're, for me, they're almost like something that was put into you, like put into your head. You know, you should feel guilty about this, but they're not actually yours. They're not your true core feelings. So sometimes we need to, you know, get past, I guess, guilt or shame to feel our true emotions. So that's one way of seeing it. In terms of shame, though, I mean, I go through it a lot. We talk a lot about it in the circles. So I facilitate circles. I could talk about this, but shame is a really powerful constant. Like for me, I feel it on a constant basis in our society. Like it's not just somebody calling you a name or overtly, you know, putting you down. I feel that kind of energy from people on a constant basis in their tone of voice. So the tone is, you know, there's a constant, I'm better than you, or I'm comparing myself to you. Or even I talk about this idea of a point system, like somehow in our society, there's some weird point system where you get more points if you get this degree or that degree, or if you are tall, or if you are like, it's just weird. I don't know what that is. It makes absolutely no sense to me to have a point system, because I mean, what points do you give if someone was depressed for 3 years and then they decided to take a shower? Like, do they get a point? Or what if I smile to my neighbor? Do I get points? Like, how are we doing this point system? This whole comparing each other is so bizarre. Mm-hmm. So this point system, or this constant comparing between people, or every time someone speaks, like, you know, judging it as, oh, that's inferior, superior, acceptable, not acceptable, it really gets to people, you know, if we all live that way. And so in our group, one thing I try to do is right from the beginning of it, I ask everyone to introduce themselves actually with the titles. And I have a title that's, you know, lawyer. So that's like high on the point system typically. So I ask everyone to introduce themselves with their titles and their usual introductions. And then we take a few moments and I invite everyone to drop it all, like drop everything. We're going to drop our titles in this room. We're going to drop our kids. We're going to drop the dogs and the cat. We're going to drop everything and just be together to discuss these topics that we're doing. And it does absolute wonders at people opening up and feeling just at ease with each other, you know, experiencing whatever they're experiencing. Some are experiencing pain, some are encouraging, some are, it doesn't really matter. It's just all honest, you know, and so it's very hard to get past shame, given how I think our society currently operates. You don't really have to come from deep inside. You're going to have to really refuse and understand yourself in a deep way to realize that that information is just not correct.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you were talking about the circles and how you facilitate the circles, it reminded me of the red tent circles that I facilitate. And we do not even know each other's names. We show up, right? And so you said, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a wife or a mother or whatever, you don't bring that in. It's you and your essence. And magic happens. I know you recognize this because you've seen it before, but magic really does happen when you drop those judgments and expectations of yourself and of other people. Because yes, if you were sitting in a circle with me, I wouldn't know that you're a lawyer, so I wouldn't give you all of those points that lawyers would gather, right? You know, and it doesn't matter, you know, at that point, we're all the same. We're just human beings. And that's a really great place to start. And so, you know, you talked about the emotion piece is sort of just the beginning. And you talked about how if you can get past the beliefs, because that's what the shame and the guilt is. It's based on beliefs and it's based on judgment. And I always say to my clients, you know, just drop the judgment, right? If we just drop the judgment, we'd be so much better off. It's not the easiest thing to do at all. But it is self-care. It is it is a way to be kind to yourself. And, you know, in your book, you say that self-love or self-care isn't selfish. Would you like to share a little bit about that?
So in terms of like what you're saying, the drop the judgments, like it's a difficult thing for people to understand. Like, what do you mean by like, how do I drop the judgments? They're just always there kind of. For me, what happened, I'm not saying it's the same for everyone, and I don't remember who prompted me to do that, but to like not to worry so much about the thinking or the judgments, but to start actually moving into my body more in general. So as opposed to trying to like fight the thinking, just build the body experience. So what I mean by that is to start to feel yourself. So whether it's a lot of meditation, or you like, you know, heart chakra opening sounds, or like whatever it is that feels. So you feel your heart space, you feel your body, you feel your, you know, yoga, meditate, everything that's in the body. You know, you'll start to just feel yourself more. And, you know, when you're talking about self-care and self-love, you just, you know, when you do a lot of feeling in yourself, in your heart, especially, and I don't mean that as a wishy-washy term, I mean that literally in the heart space, you start to feel for yourself more, and you understand yourself more, and you feel your goodness kind of, you can understand yourself, right? Like, oh, you know, oh, that's why I did that. And I'm not bad. I'm good. I just, you know, maybe I made mistakes, or maybe I'm learning. And you actually start to feel your own goodness when you understand yourself like that. And I think that's, you know, shame could dissipate when you feel the truth, basically, the truth being your own deep goodness, right? That will kind of unravel those thoughts that might be going around. And we're not taught to do that, right? Anytime we're focusing on ourselves, whether it be, okay, I want to focus on myself, see how I feel. I want to focus on myself, take care of myself, or I don't want to go for the dinner, I'm too tired. Well, you know, again, this guilt stuff has been taught that, you know, that's selfish, or taking care of yourself is selfish. But at this point, anyways, I don't think I felt it so clearly before, but at this point for me, it's not only not selfish, it's your absolute responsibility to take care of yourself. Like that is your responsibility to do in this world. And so not doing it is not doing your responsibilities for yourself. So I would even turn it extremely the other way.
But don't feel guilty selfish. About it.
No, guilty about what? Like if you can't, yeah. Or you're having a hard time doing it? No, never guilt, because you would just understand, no, it's hard for me to do it because I haven't learned to, no, because this, because that, you have to know yourself. Like nobody knows you as you know yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's it is not something to feel guilty about if you're taking care of yourself. I mean, do you feel guilty when you take care of your kids?
Exactly.
I don't see the difference. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you were talking about feeling, feeling into your heart space, I was reminded of the Heart Math Institute, and they have a sort of a guide that all you need to do is to actually put your fingertips at your heart and maybe just feel it, like feel the texture of your skin, maybe even tap it a little bit. And I found for myself that if I am in my head, or if I'm in guilt, or I'm trying to work through something and I'm not in my body, I'm not feeling it, just by putting my hand on my heart and just coming back to that sensation, just quietens the mind and allows me to get back in touch with me, the goodness of me. Like it's all out of love, right? Even though somebody might judge it as otherwise, right? So that's what I found really useful, is the physical touching your heart space brings your attention, because whenever you're feeling something in your fingers, that's where your emotion goes. When you're feeling something, that's where your attention goes. So that's what you're focused on, the actual physical heart. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so in your book, you also talk about getting love from the inside versus the outside. What did you learn about that?
I learned about many things that, I mean, that I was, and maybe others also, we spend a lot of time trying to get many things, I think, from the outside. They're actually available to us from the inside. So not only love, but other things, approval. So that's, you know, takes up a lot of people's time. If you're looking for approval always from outside instead of looking at it from the inside, right? So I can, for example, decide, you know what, Deborah, you get to decide if I'm good or not, or you get to approve of me or not. I could do that, or I could not do that, right? And keep that in myself. So giving that to somebody else to do really is like, when we talk about power, it's really giving it away to another human being, as opposed to keeping it in yourself in terms of approval. In terms of love, I also feel like, this attempt to find people who may love you, although it's a beautiful thing to get loved, so I'm not putting that down. But if someone doesn't, then, what does that mean? And are you able to find this feeling of love in yourself? So I don't know if it's a weird thing to say it's to yourself, as if you're like two people, but it doesn't really matter what words we have. But can we find just that feeling in the self? I guess by spending time, again, in the heart space or whatever works for you, and then realizing that we can really love ourselves like very, very much. And unconditionally, actually. So no matter what we do, no matter what we say, no matter what we mess up, and we can still be understanding of it and loving about it and say, oh, yeah, you messed up. Well, you were overwhelmed. You were tired. Maybe, you can really be kind that way. And in my opinion, it's just very, very difficult to get that level of unconditional love from another human being, even if they're well-intentioned, even if they're family, because unconditional is a pretty intense, that's a pretty high level love. And only you know yourself so well to give it, right? To yourself, like you're the only one who would know enough information to really give it so deeply, I think. And if another person hasn't reached the point where they love themselves so much anyways, it's very hard for people to do it for someone else. So to expect others to give you unconditional love when they don't love themselves yet is really not realistic in my view anyways. Maybe in the future, like if people really love themselves unconditionally, I think they are able to offer it to others. Mm-hmm. But that person has to arrive there first, right? Like how would you love someone else unconditionally if you don't love yourself unconditionally? Doesn't really make sense. So realistically and practically speaking, it is, at least in my experience, perfectly realistic and possible to love yourself unconditionally. And it's something that you can end up offering somewhat of to others eventually, because you're full now. So when you're offering love, it's more like spilling from yourself as opposed to, depleting something you don't even have. Do you know what I mean? Like you have a 10% and somehow it's hard to describe that way. What do you think?
I read something the other day, and it was the difference between caregiving and caretaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting because caretaking and caregiving, they kind of mean the same thing, but they actually don't. Mm-hmm. And, caregiving is the part that you've just described, is that you've got the love inside of you so that you can give it away to somebody else. It doesn't deplete you because you're already full. Mm-hmm. And caretaking, you're getting something out of doing it. So you're not actually taking that love within you and sharing it with someone else. You're actually creating something by caretaking. So
yeah, and again, it's not to criticize it, but if we see, if we're always, let's say, doing things for others to feel like, oh, if I do this, okay, I'm a good person. If I do that, I'm a good person. So we're really not, if we're honest about it, we're not really doing it fully for the other person, right? Part of it is so that I feel like a good person, right? Mm-hmm. And so the question is, why do you need to do something to feel like a good person? Why could you just do nothing? And that's where our society does not give that message, that you can absolutely sit down, do absolutely nothing ever, and there's nothing wrong. Inner feeling of goodness, there's nothing, it's not affected by what you do at all. And so it's a bit of a flip from the usual way of how you're deemed a good person if you do this and then this and this. So we're always seeking, okay, what should I do? What should I do to get these points of, I don't know what, again, these weird points where they are.
I love it. Yeah.
It's an invention.
It is. It's been a diversion for us. And I really love like that, the last point that you made we should be putting it on t-shirts. We should be, you know, spouting that out to everybody, is that you're good enough. Right? It's that not feeling good enough unless you do this or do that, or, you know, make yourself less or make yourself small, or all of those things. So that kind of leads me to the idea of, you know, how can we help each other? You know, we are a community of people and we thrive in community. And of course, the last few years we've been separating from community. And I know everybody is feeling good when they do get together with people. Myself, when I reconnect with some friends and we actually just get to share ideas and thoughts, and, you know, it's very enriching. And so the idea of the courage circle, which is what you talk about in the book, and it's what you do with others. So, you know, you say people need to be in groups and we need to belong, and you encourage the creation of courage circles. Well, what is a courage circle?
Courage circle originally was just mine, like I said, where I found my courage. But then once I wrote the book, I suggested in the book, if people want to get together and talk, I try to not make it something like just to belong, you know, to the circle, even though it's important, I guess, that feeling of belonging, because I do personally feel like the most important thing to realize is that we all belong everywhere anyway. So I'm a bit hesitant to make things into more groups where you're insulated and not realizing the bigger picture. So nothing wrong with groups, obviously, but realizing that, no, you know, regardless of the group, we are still, you know, in the bigger group of humanity. And in that aspect, I just wanted to say that about the belonging. But in terms of the circles, so in a couple of yoga studios in Montreal, I started facilitating a space where I didn't know what I was going to do at first, but we sit around, like I said, we let go of our titles a bit, and then we take a few minutes to demonstrate what is listening. And that takes time, because I think a lot of people have not even experienced that. So I ask someone, can you just share like anything about, do you want to do this now, Deborah? Do you want me to do
it?
Yes. So now, okay. So I'll ask anyone in the group, like, you know, can you share just something? And then I'll demonstrate three different types of listening. So Deborah, if you would be the person, are you willing to just share whatever? It could be anything about.
Well, yeah, sure. I'd like to share that I really love having these kinds of conversations. And when I'm by myself, I'm with my own thoughts. And so I really do like combining minds and thoughts and creating something new out of it.
Okay. So you just shared something, right? And for me, like, I really try to keep my head always focused on what is true. So it's not only about being nice, but what's true, so that in our world, we feel like we're in reality and we're not like lost and confused. Like, the more we focus on what's true. And so you just express something. So when a way of people listening, so there's three, the way I separated them. So the first one, if we imagine ourselves as a human mirror, the first person, they do what you can call gaslighting or dismissive or anything else, literally put the mirror down. Like, that didn't even exist. So whatever you said, it's like, whatever. So that person might say, oh yeah, really? I mean, I really like to talk about, you know, I like to talk to people too, because blah, 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 blah. What you just said, like, didn't even exist, basically, right? Mm-hmm. What you just said. I go on to something else, or I ignore it, or I, whatever, who cares? Or something in that tone. Or so that's common. It's like a regular way people supposedly listen, right? Very unhealthy, and over time, very, you know, damaging to us, because it gets us confused that, like, is something wrong with me? Because I keep like saying something, but it's like, it's not really real in the eyes of the other person that I speak to. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very careful being in relationships where there's a lot of dismissive or gaslighting behavior. Second type, I would call it more like the fixing energy. So the person like lifts the mirror again, the reflecting the truth mirror, but then they see something of what you said, but then they kind of put it down right away and they want to like fix the situation, right? So they might say like, oh, really? And like, oh, do you get in your head sometimes? Oh, okay. Okay. You know what I do when I get in my head? Like, the best thing you can do, just put your hands in cold water and whatever. Or also best thing you could do, like, I know this really amazing therapist, blah, 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 like whatever. So they want to like fix the situation very quickly, because usually they're not comfortable with anyone having emotions, or, you know, maybe they don't have whatever reasons is in them usually, or they want to give advice to seem really smart, you know? So right away comes back very fast, like, oh yeah, he should do this and whatever. And I have to still catch myself, I have to say. I mean, that was my way a lot, you know, what I had learned, right? I'm not hard on myself. It's what I had learned in my life. So it's something I really try to be very conscious to not do all the time. So that also doesn't count in my world as healthy listening, because constantly having to fix someone. So you express something that wasn't too deep, difficult or whatever, but what if you had expressed like, I'm really sad about whatever. I'm like, oh really? Okay. Then you should, the best thing you should go do this. Go do it. So you're constantly giving the message, like something's wrong with your feelings. Something's wrong with what you do. Something like, we need to fix this every time. And that is, in my view, this subtle shaming that's happening like all the time in our conversations with one another. And then the third type of listening, so I demonstrated, again, someone literally just shared in the room, so everyone's like witnessing it. It's not just theoretical, would be to truly listen. So truly listen would be just to be a clean mirror and to say something like, for you, it sounds like, you know, you find that sometimes you get a little bit too much in your own thoughts as well, and that having somebody to, you know, bounce things back and forth with or share and get kind of real or intimate with helps to bring you back into your body and feeling state and connecting or something. So you're really enjoying that. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that's actually the truest reflection of what I had said. And yes, it's not trying to fix, it's not trying to shame, it's not trying to dismiss, but it's actually, I know that you heard what I said by what you repeated back to me as the clean mirror.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with what you feel whatsoever. Right. And so if we do that to each other and allow each person to speak honestly, basically, right? Because you just spoke honestly. All you did was say the truth. That's all you did, right? This is the truth. So if each person is now allowed to speak the truth of what's going on inside them, for example, and not get dismissed or, you know, shamed or this and that, then they end up opening up even more. Like if you do that number three, they open more, they share more, people are now connected, you know, they're more intimate together. And then that is like truer connection than, you know, maybe the artificial connection that a lot of people are looking, you know, they think that that's going to feel like connection, but this is the real connection where each person could just be honest and open and not controlling each other or trying to tell each other what to do or what to feel or what to be. You know, that is actually a deeper a connecting way. So we do that in this. I do this demonstration every single time. It takes about, whatever, 5-7 minutes. So we drop our title. We do listening so we understand what listening is. And then we discuss a different topic. Every single week, we do a different topic of discussion. And everyone, you know, I start just to get the conversation going, but then everyone goes around and talks about their, you know, experience or point of view. Sometimes people interact and say things to each other, whatever, but it's a beautiful space because people are natural. It's just actually amazing because they're honest, they're open, and it's respectful. Like there's nowhere else in the world that I know like that myself. Like I never lived this anywhere else where you can have a group of people of all ages and races and titles and whatever else, all sitting together, talking about what their current experiences and thoughts are, being open about it, sometimes sharing pretty deeply, all strangers, pretty much. I mean, there's repeated people, but so it's a wonderful experience for me too, because it feels sane, feels healthy, it feels normal, actually.
Yeah.
The rest doesn't feel normal.
I love it. Well, we need things like the Courage Circle, and that's exactly what happens in the Red Tent too, is we actually do learn to listen and have one conversation instead of separate conversations, which basically means that the person that's talking on the other side, it's not relevant enough, so I'm going to start my own conversation. So there's all these little dynamics here that if we learn to do things in different ways, as you said, it's healthier, and we all grow when one heals. All are healed, right? And I think you mentioned that in your book too. So then if people are curious about how to find their own courage. I do recommend getting your book because, again, it's an easy read. And I love the contents list because you can just go down the contents list and pick the phrase that relates to the way you're feeling. That's what I did when I first got the book. And it's like, oh, that's what I needed to hear. You know, that was really cool. You know, if people are interested in maybe even starting a courage circle, what do you recommend? Where do they start?
So I've been facilitating these in person until this week. And then this week, two people said, well, why don't you try online? And I was like, no, online is not person. And I've been so, you know, determined that things have to be in person. But I decided to try it because it is possible. Maybe it won't be the same, but it will be still interesting. And so I did start to post to do online circles. And what I'm hoping or envisioning, it didn't happen yet, but it's in my mind and then eventually in reality, is to try to create them like in different physical locations. Even if I can't be there, I could do online. But what happened in my circle is that the group started to get together afterwards without me and the circle around, which is so beautiful because now you have people you're getting together with that are respectful, open, and listening. Group, which is so such a wonderful thing, like really connecting that way. So I'm hoping to like, so I booked to start online circles in a few different spots, but I would keep them separate physically, not try to do all the online together, because again, to encourage people eventually to meet in person themselves after, you know, whatever, I can help facilitate that by setting a place or whatever, even if I can't come, where they can actually meet in person afterwards. I think that would be super cool. So if somebody wants to contact me or help me start one in their area too, that would be cool. It's not hard to do. Meetup is very well organized and to do these things. But if someone's interested, they can do that, or they could join the online one for now that I've set up in Montreal and Toronto. By the way, I just set it up last week. And you just go on my website, which is thecouragecircle.com, and join the free meetup, and we'll see how it goes.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting the show. I need your help to keep bringing you quality episodes. Go to owenmcgray.ca to become a supporter for the price of a coffee. I'm so grateful to you. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.